It is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonah Schaefer here on this Wednesday morning. Thank you so much for tuning in. We got a lot to talk about. Bunch of roster moves and rule changes to get to discuss as they relate to the Baltimore Ravens. We're also going to talk about what John Harbaugh had to say down in Orlando at the NFL owners meetings, what he had to say, and more importantly, what he meant by what he had to say. But before we get to any of that, of course, we do have to touch on the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse, which occurred around 1:30 in the morning on Tuesday. A major, major tragedy for the city of Baltimore and its surrounding areas. Two survivors were pulled out of the water, and six construction workers who went into the water are presumed dead at this point. It has just been a very, very rough last 24, 36 hours in Baltimore and in Maryland overall. And so we'd be remiss if we didn't send our condolences to those who have lost loved ones and those who are searching for loved ones. And it's been obviously the dominant storyline here at the Baltimore Banner because our reporters have done a great job covering this very, very difficult story. So definitely sending our condolences, our thoughts, our prayers to anybody who's been affected by this and the recovery effort as it continues will be paramount. And it will be the dominant storyline in Baltimore and in Maryland, as it should be. And sports and baseball opening day coming tomorrow, and the Ravens going through their offseason, all of that is far secondary to the tragedy that occurred a couple days ago. But Jonas, we should talk a little bit of football. It's what we're here to do. You were down in Orlando for the owners' meetings, and we'll get to what you heard and what you read between the lines as to what John Harbaugh had to say with the media, but some other stuff that occurred around the NFL in general. The rule changes, most notably the kickoff rule. We'll touch on that in a bit. How about the hip drop tackle being banned and the ultimate irony that the tackle that was made on Mark Andrews that drew all of the hoopla and that almost ended Mark Andrews' season wouldn't even have been banned under this new rule?
We think okay. That this was from Rich McKay, who's the competition committee chairman, you know, did his usual speech to reporters. I wasn't there for this. We were working on other stuff, but you know, he said that play involving Mark was not on the video of plays that were textbook examples of the hip drop. A tackle from Justin Madubuike was. And I think the crucial distinction is that, you know, there wasn't that swivel technique, that there wasn't any of the tackler just kind of using the ball carrier like a dance pole, like a dancing pole, to just kind of, you know, swing the momentum and bring them down to the ground. And, you know, the Logan Wilson one was obviously pretty violent, pretty dramatic, but it was just him dropping his body weight without that swivel technique. And I don't know if you ever played any like touch or tackle football back in the day, Paul, but it brought me back to my days as a bigger lad going against some of my smaller friends, where, you know, you get Jonas out in the open field and the only way to bring him down at, you know, 6'6", 200 or whatever he was to just hop on those shoulders and just kind of throw your leg in front of him. And so that was always kind of scary to me. And I can't imagine what it is for these guys whose, you know, livelihoods rely on their ability to walk and run and to not be hurt. So I get it. Mark Andrews didn't really seem to care that much about it when we asked him when he came back in mid-January, I guess it is at this point. But it's going to be a headache, I'm sure, at some point for us writing about it, talking about it, because there will be some controversial calls or non-calls. But, you know, the NFL is all about player safety. And if it keeps players like Mark Andrews up and running, then I'm all for it.
Jonas, do you think I ever played football? I'm 5'8".
I know. So was Deuce Vaughn. It's like 5'5", right?
I mean, Joan, if you've never seen Jonas and I standing next to each other, it's somewhat like the Princess Bride, and I am Wallace Shawn, and you are Andre the Giant.
My fall sport was soccer. I'm just talking about like backyard football with the buds.
I gotcha. No, yeah. Don't speak for yourself. The other rule that was approved is the new kickoff rule. So kickoffs are going to be looking a whole lot different. If you go to the NFL's page and read the full list of new restrictions and rules, the list is quite lengthy. But Jonas, what is the layman's way to describe this kickoff rule, which is essentially attempting to remove a lot of the injuries that came with the old kickoff format, but also increase the number of kickoff returns?
Yeah, according to the NFL, only about a one-fifth of kickoffs last year were returned. This year, the hope is that with these new kickoff rules, we would get between 50 and 60%. So that's about 1,000 plays, the NFL's total ledger. It's kind of complicated. If you want to see just kind of a more, you know, video-friendly breakdown, Jeff Darlington of ESPN had a good tweet a couple of days ago, just kind of showing what it is. But basically, there is no longer a run-up to the kind of collision area, what the NFL is now calling the setup zone. You basically have the team that's kicking off has guys arrayed at the 40-yard line. The receiving team has their guys set up between the 30 and 35. Neither of those groups of players can move until the ball is touched. If the ball lands between the goal line and the 20-yard line in the target zone or the landing zone, which is what they're calling, then it's expected to be returned. If it's kicked into the end zone for a touchback, then that's a 30-yard, you know, you get the ball at the 30-yard line. If it bounces into the end zone from that landing zone, it's only a 20-yard line set up. So there is a lot of incentive to get guys to put the ball in play and to have these teams actually make the kickoff a more vital part of their game plan. And I think it's exciting. I think it's thinking back to the days of like NFL Blitz and Madden and just all the fun that you would have when you were returning kickoffs. And every time you touch the ball, it seemed like there's a possibility that you could return it. And now there's an actual incentive structure in place from the NFL to get these kickoffs back to the way that they were without that injury risk. And, you know, John Harbaugh is a bit of a mad scientist in special teams. We were just talking before we went on about how Justin Tucker 4 or 5 years ago tried an onside kick that was basically like a drop kick in rugby. I don't think the Ravens recovered it, but they were hoping to at least, you know, exploit a loophole in the playbook. The NFL said, no, you're not exploiting that loophole because we're going to ban that altogether. But I think John Harbaugh, being the special teams freak that he is, would be delighted at the possibility of like thinking of all the possible ways that the Ravens could have the upper hand on this. You know, they've always been a top five special teams unit by DVOA, and they have some guys who are very, very fun with the ball. And it's just a matter of which of those guys / which guys they might take in the draft as well could be, you know, optimally used to possibly bring that back or take those typical 20, 25 yard line setups into something more explosive. I mean, there's a lot of guys on this roster who could do fun stuff with the balls in their hand, even if it's maybe not the most prudent thing injury-wise.
Do you think NFL coaching staffs will now have somebody labeled special teams freak? Not special teams coordinator. That's a separate position. Special teams freak. John Harbaugh would certainly fit under that category if that were the case. The only thing I would worry about is don't outsmart yourself. Don't try to do something too crazy that you are not sure is going to work, where you put players in harm's way. You make players do something that they're not used to doing. You threw out the possibility, Jonas, of Derrick Henry taking kickoffs because he is a monster with the ball in his hands. Why would you make your newly signed $16 million running back who's 30 years old do something he's never done before and take unnecessary hits? That would be beyond me. It would be fun to watch, but
you don't think Derrick Henry was returning kicks back in like Yulee, Florida or whatever the name of his place was
12 years ago? Yeah, I think maybe he was, but he was probably throwing passes too.
The whole conceit of this is like it's less like a crash test dummy, and it's more like an extension of the run game where you could have different schemes and stuff. So as opposed, like, this is just,
but what if he fumbles?
Like,
he's not used to catching the ball. You know, that could be a fumble possibility. We saw Zay Flowers take the punt after the safety in the Colts game last year and step out of bounds. Stuff, players who aren't used to practicing this stuff.
Rank these guys in terms of like how much it would make sense for the Ravens to have them return kickoffs.
Okay.
This is just
Jonas Schaefer, number one.
Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, Keaton, and this is like do or die, Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, Keaton Mitchell, Justice Hill, Zay Flowers.
Keaton Mitchell 1, Zay Flowers 2, Justice Hill 3, Derrick Henry 4, then 50 feet of crap, then Lamar Jackson. Are you saying like with Howard. The game on the line, they get one kickoff to win the game and they got to take it?
Yeah, just like bring it
in a playoff game.
Bring it back as far as possible. I think it would also be fun to see like maybe Kyle Hamilton, just the natural athlete that he is. You know,
he'd be great at it. Yeah.
When I was talking to friends and family for that feature story I wrote last year, everyone was like, oh yeah, you know, he could have made it as a wide receiver. And hey, if the Ravens draft Keon Coleman, maybe he's the guy who they put in. I just think maybe it depends from game to game. Maybe like some of those kickoff teams are going to be more reliant on speed in terms of who they're setting up. Maybe some teams are going to be more reliant on size, just so they're not displaced at the proverbial line of scrimmage. So maybe the Ravens have a different pitches that they can use. But, you know, I think probably the most likely outcome is someone like Justice Hill or Keaton Mitchell when he's fully healthy being back there, because they have, especially not Justice Hill, has that special teams know-how and understands how to be productive without being particularly risky. But I don't know. I mean, like, if it's just like two or three more carries a game for Derrick Henry, you know, he was putting his body through hell in Tennessee, and he's going to get less touches in Baltimore because of the Lamar Jackson factor. So why not at least consider putting a guy out there in a situation where it's not going to be like the old ways, where you're having, you know, wedge blocks and guys just coming up the middle of the field looking to take a guy's head off, because they just don't have that run-up speed. I just think it'd be fun.
It maybe in a playoff game, do or die situation. I'm just not ready to see it. All right, let's touch on some minor signings that the Ravens made in the last couple weeks, adding four players. One of them was a returning guy, Arthur Mollett, 30 years old. He turns 31 in July, and they signed him to a two-year, $4 million extension. He was great for the Ravens last year. Marlon Humphrey goes down. He steps up big time, had some great field coverage, could play in the slot, could play nickel, could do a lot of different things. I think he adds some depth to that cornerback room. Josh Jones, offensive lineman. I think some Ravens fans saw this and thought this is our replacement maybe for Morgan Moses. That's not the case. Josh Jones is 26, and I don't think the Ravens are bringing him in on a one-year, $1.79 million deal in order to shore up, Morgan Moses's replacement on the right side of the line. I think he's going to be solid depth for them. He can play tackle. He can play guard. Mostly played on the left side for Arizona, former 2020 third round pick by Arizona. I think they're still going to draft offensive line early. And then a couple other defenders that the Ravens added. Chris Board, familiar to the Ravens, signed a one-year, $1.15 million deal. Signed with the Ravens as an undrafted free agent in 2018. Played 63 games over 4 years and played in Detroit in 2022. Then the Patriots last year, just a key special teamer to make up for the loss of Delshon Phillips, who signed with the Texans, and he was released, so he doesn't count against the cap pick, the comp pick formula. And then Kadar Holman, 29 years old, turns 30 in September. Terms of that deal not yet disclosed. Played in 17 games for the Texans last year, started one of them. He's a former sixth round pick. Ronald Darby signed a two-year deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Kadar Holman just firms up that cornerback spot. So some nice depth signings for the Ravens, but in no way are these guys going to change the Ravens' draft plans in a month.
Yeah, and they're also not guys who are going to cost them any comp picks, we believe. You know, all these guys, I think, are coming in underneath that threshold for signings that might take away one of their later round comp picks that have yet to be awarded in 2025. I mean, I think the Josh Jones deal is probably the most notable, the PFF projection for him, because of his versatility, because of his athleticism, giving him a relatively higher upside than most guys who are available at this time of the year. 2 years, $13 million. So for the Ravens to get him for, you know, $5 million cheaper than was projected by PFF, I think it's good business, especially, you know, when you hear John Harbaugh talk about him maybe being the same vein as someone like John Simpson, you know, a guy who was overlooked and maybe undervalued coming into Baltimore when he did. But you get him into the system, you get him into the building, you get him working with Joe D. and that offensive line group. Maybe he's a potential starter at some point. Maybe if it's just a spot start, but you know, they need some help along that offensive line. I was coming up with the very, very cheap and corny pun that, you know, Netflix has a three body problem. Well, so do the Ravens, because they have three spots to fill on that offensive line and no answers. But we could save that for closer to the draft. We can work on the Netflix jokes.
Yeah, let's
actually invest time and money into that.
Yeah, we got a few weeks to hammer that one out. That one maybe.
I also haven't seen that show yet.
Yeah, me neither. You mentioned the offensive line holes, and that is a perfect transition into our next topic, which is John Harbaugh speaking with the media for a very long time down in Orlando. And look, the state of the Ravens roster right now is not terrific, as we expected. It is the final week of March, and this team still has plenty of holes to fill. They're very thin in a lot of areas. They're missing three starters on the offensive line. They're missing their second leading wide receiver. They're missing almost 20 sacks between two players in Kyle Van Noy and Jadeveon Clowney on the defensive side of the ball last year. But John Harbaugh doesn't seem to be concerned. This is what we expected, Jonas, that this team would be very much an unfinished product at this point in the offseason. And I think John Harbaugh is continuing to preach that kind of patience. When he was talking about the offensive line, we're going to parse what he said and what he meant. You mentioned the offensive line. He made that comment about Josh Jones maybe being similar to John Simpson and kind of took a shot at outside parties like the media, who didn't think much of John Simpson when he was acquired, and said, I think you guys didn't think much of John Simpson. He came in, played pretty well. That doesn't necessarily mean Josh Jones is going to come in and be the next John Simpson. But about the offensive line, John Harbaugh said, quote, I expect it to be better than last year. That's always the goal, is to improve along the offensive line. We want to be even better than we were last year, end quote. That's what he said. What he meant, Jonas, is I have no idea what this group is going to look like in week one. And the fact that he mentioned Joe D'Alessandris, who's the offensive line coach, before he mentioned any player personnel, anybody's name, tells me that they are still wildly unsure as to what their starting five offensive linemen group will look like come week one.
What's funny is the perception of this offensive line has been so negatively affected by what happened in that Chiefs game that it's almost given John like a lower standard that he has to meet for this line to be considered good going into next year. Like, you know, Lamar was sacked four times. The ground game didn't have a whole lot of holes. You know, you look on Facebook and Instagram and all these, you know, social media channels where people are posting stuff about the offensive line, and there are a lot of haters for what that offensive line was last year. And brother, I gotta tell you, the offensive line last year was not what it was.
It was pretty good. Presented
as. It was good. I think PFF had them as the fifth rated offensive line. It was top 10 in both run block win rate and pass block win rate in ESPN. And that was with, you know, Ronnie Stanley being hurt and Morgan Moses being hurt and, you know, Kevin Zeitler being banged up toward the end of the year. So do not let, you know, the one game against the Chiefs kind of color your perception of how consistent and steady that offensive line was. We should mention a lot of that has to do with the success of the running game, and a lot of that success has to do with Lamar Jackson, because, you know, for as long as he is mobile and healthy, he is going to be the guy who throttles a lot of those, you know, speed rushes and conventional kind of defensive line tactics, because he's just not a guy that you want to give, you know, that hole up the middle to. So I think Lamar is always going to be a guy who lifts the floor of any offensive line. But still, it's not a surprise that John is talking about, you know, the high hopes that he has for this group, because, you know, I was just kind of thinking, like, should we have asked John if he expects the 2024 team to be better or to be better than the 2023 team? And I'm sure he would have said, yeah, like, why not? Even though last year's team was generationally good, except at the point when it needed to be the most. So that's just the optimistic part of John Harbaugh. It's never going to die. He's always going to be saying stuff like this. But yeah, I mean, right now, I don't know what DEFCON level we're at with the offensive line. Not really interested in assigning DEFCON levels to offensive lines before you know, offseason workouts really start and the draft ends. But, you know, they have three holes to fill, and we don't know how much trust they have in Ben Cleveland to be a 17-game starter. We don't know, you know, what Andrew Voorhees is going to be looking like. We don't know if Saleh is, you know, moved on from being kind of the unmitigated mess that he was in the preseason last year as a rookie. We don't know what Daniel Faalele might look like in the kind of zone schemes that the Ravens seem to be wanting to run at times last year. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and I admire John Harbaugh's optimism because I do not share the same beliefs. Yeah.
No, I mean, this team led the NFL in rushing yards during the regular season last year. You don't do that without a good offensive line. I know they didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher on the ground, but they were consistently beating teams up front offensively. And I just, yeah, maybe they can replace their three offensive line starters that they lost. I just, at this point, have a hard time seeing how they could be better than they were last year. But if they nail that first round pick, 30th overall, with an offensive lineman, if they trade up, if they make some smart depth signings, if Josh Jones turns out to be John Simpson 2.0, then maybe they will have a better group up front. It just, at this point, looks hard to see that. There's still a lot of time left for them to nail this. And I think the wild card is going to be Daniel Faalele, like you said, because the way that they talk about him, the way that they reference him, they talk about needing to get him more playing time. Now, that could be just trying to show confidence in a young guy. However, they seem to be optimistic and high on him. What John Harbaugh also had to say, speaking of the offensive line, about the Morgan Moses trade, he said, quote, "That's a tough explanation because I think fans are right in the sense that, wow, just looking at that as a single move, it was ... Morgan Moses is a heck of a player. Everybody loves him. He works hard. He's productive, played through injuries last year, and was on a team-friendly contract," end quote. I think what he meant was we really couldn't have kept Morgan Moses. We really just got a pick swap in the fourth round for a guy that started almost every game for us last year and was an above average player on a team friendly contract.
He said the quiet part out loud. Like, I believe I was the one to ask John about Morgan. And I think I use team friendly contract. Like, but like, you don't expect the team representative to say that there was a team friendly contract for the guy who is no longer on your team. It doesn't make any sense, except in the sense that obviously they want to make moves. They want to see what Daniel Faalele has. There was some pushback to this notion that, like, oh, the Ravens were cutting bait with Morgan Moses at the right time because, you know, a guy like that who is playing through a pec injury, that's obviously a sign that, you know, he is heading downhill physically. Like, Marlon Humphrey came back from that pec injury and was totally fine. Michael Pierce came back from a torn biceps and was totally fine. Those are not the kind of soft tissue injuries that you worry about. Those are the things that you, like, get a little bit of surgery on, get some rest and recovery, and then bam, you should be good to go. It's not a joint. It's not like a ball and socket injury where you worry about degeneration or, you know, muscular atrophy or anything like that. A pec can be rebuilt. A knee is a lot tougher. So to see some people saying, like, oh, this was, you know, the just step one of a massive fall off for Morgan Moses, maybe, but also maybe the fact that he was a above average to quite good lineman last year, despite playing 3/4 of the year with a torn pectoral muscle, is a sign that he would have been even better with, like, with a you know, surgery under his feet and a clean bill of health. So, you know, I think the Jets definitely got a nice deal. I think, you know, ESPN gave the Ravens like a C+ for the deal, which seems fair just based off the return that they got for a guy who's probably going to be good again next year, and the fact that we don't know what Daniel Faalele is next year. So it was kind of surprising to hear John Harbaugh be as frank as he was, but, you know, I guess credit to him for acknowledging that there are salary cap considerations in place with this, and, you know, the salary cap is real.
And he gets it. I mean, John Harbaugh knows the machinations for it. I think as a football coach, he's just thinking that's one fewer good veteran to play with on that offensive line. What did you hear and what did you think John meant when he was talking about the two free agent edge rushers I mentioned before who combined for nearly 20 sacks in Jadeveon Clowney and Kyle Van Noy?
You know, he said that there's optimism with both, but consider the source. We are talking about John Harbaugh. You know, he said he's been texting with JD, meaning Clowney and Kyle here and there over the last couple of weeks. We followed up with asking if he has a sense for their timetable, which I think is probably the most important element with this. I think teams are not every team, but a lot of teams are going to keep money in their budget for someone like Clowney and definitely someone like Van Noy, because he would be probably 50% of the asking price for JD. But, you know, John Harbaugh said he didn't really have a sense for when they're looking to sign. Obviously, both those guys took a while to sign last year. We know that Clowney has put his body through the ringer over the years, and there's probably not a whole lot of interest in, you know, going to offseason workouts or maybe even the, you know, mandatory minicamp unless he definitely has to. So it could be a situation, Paul, where we're talking, you know, a month from now, 2 months from now, just kind of wondering why those guys haven't signed and if the Ravens still have space in their budget. We know that they do. Just a matter of, you know, pulling a couple cap levers and restructuring a couple contracts, maybe releasing someone here or there. But I guess it just depends on, you know, if the money is right and if the culture is good. We know on that second question, it definitely is for Clowney and Van Noy. They both really seem to love it in Baltimore, but it's a business. And if these teams with more cap space than the Ravens have similar roles and maybe similar optimism about what 2024 could mean for them, then it's entirely plausible that optimism from John Harbaugh about getting one, if not both, those guys back to Baltimore is somewhat misplaced.
And another position that Harbaugh was optimistic about, the wide receiver room. Quote, "We have Sean Ryan in there as a young guy," end quote. That is taken entirely out of context. What he really meant in that instance is, I have already mentioned Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers, and Nelson Agholor, and I have now run out of players to name. Because those three are really the only guys that you can count on to be there in week one. Sean Ryan, as a 2023, 25-year-old undrafted rookie out of Rutgers, if he is on this team in week one due to anything other than a massive injuries, that would be a concern. He certainly is a young guy who can take a step forward. But come on, this team obviously needs to add at the wide receiver position, and they have plenty of time to do that. You know, they still have the draft. They could still take Keon Coleman or whoever it is in the first round. They could still add depth in the middle rounds. But they also have been tied to, reportedly, a couple other free agent wide receivers. They reportedly had a meeting with Detroit wide receiver Josh Reynolds, who had 600 receiving yards last year, more than OBJ, 5 touchdowns. And Michael Gallup, former Cowboys wide receiver, has also been tied to the Ravens. So there are a couple other moves there. I know OBJ is still out there. He's not coming back, but they could still add some veteran depth, maybe for somebody who's a little bit younger than OBJ too, and somebody who maybe was a little bit more productive, has a little bit more left in the tank. They may not necessarily need a quote-unquote veteran in the room to bring these guys along. Just go out and get somebody who's going to add and at least raise the floor of this wide receiver room.
Yeah, and like we talked about last week, it could be someone who's not available yet because they're waiting until a draft to see, you know, these teams are waiting to see if they actually need player X's contract on the books because they drafted someone in the first or second round and they don't feel like they need this player anymore. I'd say it's probably less likely to happen at a skill position spot like wide receiver than it is, you know, offensive line, where, you know, that there's more numbers in the room and maybe you feel a little bit better about the depth there. But I think someone like Josh Reynolds, if the price is right, would make a lot of sense for the Ravens, because not only does he have that productivity and that ability to go over the middle and be in that sweet spot for Lamar, but he's also a good blocker. You know, you have to be basically to thrive in that line system with Dan Campbell and everything that they have going on in Detroit. So probably a little bit more bullish on him contributing in Baltimore than someone like Michael Gallup, who just has not been able to physically recover from what he's kind of put his body through the past few years, just doesn't have the same juice that he did in those first couple of years in the league. I think Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers, Nelson Agholor is a solid, you know, wide receiver one, wide receiver two, wide receiver three. That could definitely get better and probably will get better at some point over the draft, especially if they spend a day one or day two pick on that position. But yeah, with all due respect to Sean Ryan, I'm not seeing the vision. He's not going to be on my fantasy football big board at any point soon.
And with all due respect to Josh Johnson, I don't think that he is going to be the backup quarterback to Lamar Jackson 2024, as John Harbaugh claimed, because he said, quote, "Josh Johnson will be the backup quarterback. He's coming back. That part we can confirm is true. He is coming back. We're thrilled to have him back. He can still play at a really high level. He knows the offense inside and out. He contributes to the offense. He and Lamar have a great relationship, so I think he brings so much to us. Malik, it's just kind of an opportunity for him. He's a great guy, end quote. If he's a great guy is like the first thing that gets discussed when John Harbaugh is talking about you, it's usually not very good. Although Kevin Zeitler did get a shout out about what his wife bringing in baked goods. So that was a nice little personal shout out. But Jonas, I think what John Harbaugh meant here is very different from what he's saying.
I wouldn't rule out the possibility of Josh Johnson being the back quarterback.
In QB2? 37 years old?
I don't know. It's they trust him. They value him. Like he wouldn't have made the season opening roster last year if they didn't trust him.
But QB3 is fine. They need a better backup. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. I think so. Just a matter of the bigger picture of are they going to spend their draft capital on a quarterback and when and you know how high up. I don't think there's going to be a lot of backup quarterbacks becoming available over the next couple of months. Maybe like a lower tier QB2, but then you're just kind of running into the same problem where it's just a slight upgrade on Josh Johnson. You know, obviously they didn't want Tyler Huntley back because Tyler Huntley did not go for much to Cleveland, and he's not even going to be their backup at this point because Jameis Winston is ahead of him on that Browns depth chart. But one of the smaller, more rule changes from the NFL this year was that you can elevate a practice squad quarterback to the roster every single week. So you don't need to have the kind of roster mechanics that the Ravens did last year, where it was three quarterbacks on the 3-man roster every single week so that you could have Josh Johnson and not have him be exposed or whatever. So that could make the Ravens roster finagling a little bit easier. Just the fact that you could probably get away with just having two quarterbacks on the 53 and maybe stashing Malik Cunningham, but still having him, you know, available to come up and be that quarterback 3 on game day. So that's something that's interesting and possible when we consider just, you know, why Malik Cunningham is still probably a good bet even though he might not be a good bet to make the Ravens 53-man roster next year, could still be in their plans conceivably because of this new NFL rule change.
Yeah, we also went from could the Ravens get Justin Fields as their backup and to no. Get ready to speak Josh Johnson, everybody. This is a position they need to work on, in my opinion. All right, Jonas, that just about does it. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. At Jonas_Schaefer is his Twitter handle. I am at Paul Mancano and also at All Banner Sports. Please give us a thumbs up, a like. You can subscribe anywhere that you get your podcast. We've also got a new baseball podcast as well, the Banner Baseball Show, with opening day set for tomorrow. So tune into that as well. We'll have episodes throughout the season. Jonas and I will be back next week, presumably Tuesday at 11 a.m. with a live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter to start looking ahead to the draft. Draft is less than a month away, and we'll have positional breakdowns, positional previews as the Ravens prepare to take a player with the 30th overall pick. That just about does it for our show. Thanks so much for tuning in. And of course, subscribe to the Baltimore Banner, $1 for 6 months to read all of Jonas's great work, as well as Gianna Han and Kyle Goon and everybody else working for the BaltimoreBanner.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.